like to welcome our featured guest, Hita El Hayat, and also our guest host, Safwa Babana Hampton, who returns after appearing on this show a few weeks ago. And I should also welcome back Peter Lim after a short hiatus.
Sure. I would like to ask a question related to the origin or the preoccupations that inspired you to write Le Monde Arabe au Féminin and Le Maghreb des Femmes, among other studies of the feminine condition in the Arab world. And my question to you is, given that your research makes a significant contribution to the field of women's studies, could you summarize what were the questions, the major questions you were trying to raise in these books, and what kinds of answers were trying to formulate?
Well, thank you very much. It's the world that you are speaking of. I wrote my first book because it was very, very, very difficult for me to be a woman. Like Simone de Beauvoir, I could say, je ne suis pas née femme, je le suis devenue. I was not born woman, I became a woman. And in my milieu, in my environment, it was so, so, so difficult to be a girl, an orphan, in a patriarchal, strict family and society. It was so hard to be a student of medicine among men and male students that I asked myself, why it's like that? Why I have to suffer a lot just to be myself or just to exist? And the first book, Le Monde Arabe au Féminin, is a long research of 10 years, started in Morocco. Then I finished it in Paris because a lot of possibilities of library, of research was possible there. Then it was the beginning of something very important in Paris. I feel it was possible to create. That was impossible for me in Morocco because the possibility to create was not very, very possible for a woman or for a girl. And it was the beginning of this wonderful adventure. Now I have 32 books published. So it was a long way.
So in a way, it was the beginning of your writing career and anthropological research and, on Arab societies, especially in regard to the question of women and the condition of women?
Yes, it started from the woman, but as in Paris, I had a wonderful meeting with Georges Devreux, that is the creator or the one of the heirs of Sigmund Freud, the 30 once recognized all over the world. I was his student, and after that I was in the field of ethnopsychiatry, and I think I'm one of the pupils, direct pupils of Devreux. So it was after his death, It was impossible for me to be in with someone in ethnopsychiatry. The master was dead. So I entered the à l'école des sciences sociales in Paris, the field of anthropology. And now I am saying all over the world that the time of ethnology is over. Ethnology is something related to colonialism. Now it's time for universal anthropology that makes relationships and links between all culture and all civilization all over the world. Yes, today the situation is very complex, let's say. The period of the very interesting ideas about psychiatry and anthropology are finished. We can say that the period of Frantz Fanon in Maghreb related to, for example, Le Portrait du Colonisé of Albert Memmi in sociology are finished. Why? Because after the colonialism, the 50 last years of independence was not very brilliant in science and in what we call in French les sciences humaines. All over Africa and all over the Arab world. So, for example, psychoanalysis is quite null in the Arabic world and Islamic world. And now, people like Frantz Fanon or Bastaglia in Italy or people like this don't exist. Now we have something like neurosciences and just drugs. We are going to shape human being as something very artificial, I can say. And the pharmaceutical trusts all over the world are now just able to sell a lot of drugs and medicines, more and more and more expensive, and it's awful for the third world and for the Maghrebian people. And this is, in my point of view, something not very interesting in creating a strong school of thinking about the problems of the individual person inside the group. Why? Because, or we have the possibility to have drugs, etc., and psychiatrists, or we are in the Middle Ages of chiromancy, of superstition, all this field that was so encouraged by people, and until now by people living in Paris like Toby Nathan. And for me it's something just to erase, and we have to think in another way of all those problems in those cultures so poor, without science, without specialists, without a lot of things.
The work Métissage Culturel is a collaborative work with Italian anthropologist Alain Gousseau, and it seems to be a work where you open a dialogue about important questions of the relations between cultures and how to formulate, you know, a new vocabulary for coexistence and peaceful dialogue between across cultures. How would you describe this experience of why, in what conditions this did this work emerge, you know, in response to what urgent questions or circumstances?
Mm-hmm. This starts from the idea of Alain Gousseau, after he read my book Le Monde Arabo Féminin, to have links all over Mediterranean Sea between people in north and in south. And we wrote together two books at least, Métissage Culturel and Psychiatrie Culturelle Politique. And we worked a lot on the idea that now the world is going to something mixing all cultures, all creations, all possibility of eating, of dressing, of we can say that, for example, an internet and the possibility by plane to go everywhere in the world is cutting all the comment on va dire les murs de sécurité, walls of security, we can say, between cultures. This is going to destructure the world in order to have another world mixed, a melting pot, not only in USA but all over the world. And the free market is going to help in that way. We have, for example, the same cloth or statues or something like that, or perfumes all over the world. And for example, we buy in Casablanca the same things coming from India that we find in Tunisia or in Bucharest, etc. So this is creating the beginning, the nest, we can say, of the world of the future.
If I could build on this point and connect the subject of the conference that you are speaking at here at MSU this weekend on Muslims, race, and the public sphere with this idea of the Mediterranean. The conference itself is trying to think about Muslims and their racialization in terms of public policy in the media and popular culture. In the Italian context, the Moroccan has for many years represented the stereotype of the Maghrebi immigrant, regardless of whether it's a person from Tunisia or Egypt or Libya or elsewhere, right? And the stereotype has often been very negative, which is not unusual for immigrants from any place, but tended to be, you know, male, unskilled, violent, a thief, a drug dealer, a Muslim. But I've also noticed over the years going back home that there's been some changes in perception in many ways of North Africans in particular. And I wonder how much of those changes have been connected to changes in immigration flows in Italy and throughout the Mediterranean, that you see a lot more Albanians, you see a lot more Romanians, Chinese. Mm-hmm. And so has the perception of Moroccan immigrants or Maghrebi immigrants changed as a result of these? And related to this also, have Italian perceptions of Islam changed with these other shifts that I just mentioned?
I'm afraid not. Why? Because it's a blasphemy. As said yesterday, Mr. Mamdani, to create a relationship between a nationality and a religion. This is not really, this is the unique way for Western people to conceive this Maghrebian guys, really violent, most of them, really dealers, a lot of them, but they are not all of them dealers or violent. So we can say that now the first colony in Italy of all the immigrants is until now Moroccan. And outside Morocco, for example, for girls, they arrive in Italy not veiled. Some weeks or some months later, they are veiled because there is something like a stream working deeply all Europe, Italy, etc., etc., in order to have this European Muslim community. Like, for example, Tariq Ramadan is willing to have this fantastic republic of the marvelous Islamic people, perfect persons, doing well, everything in not what tomorrow I'm calling Dar al-Islam. That means more or less the domain of peace for Islamic people, just by being strictly Muslims. For example, I did 5 censorships on La Liaison. So we are not free to write or to think or to say everything. This is clear for me.
Yeah, La Liaison is a good example of a work that had its own history.
A long history.
Yes. It's coming into being itself is a story.
Yes.
And perhaps you can tell us about the reasons why it initially appeared under a pseudonym.
Yes, because under the rule of the last king, it was impossible to be really free. So now we are, we could be the example of the most advanced Muslim country on 57 or on 22 Arab countries in Morocco. So it's fantastic saying this. We have a lot to do, but until now, I think that Tunisia on one hand and Morocco on the other hand are the most advanced countries for freedom. It is not really freedom, but we can say that in front of Saudi Arabia or Yemen or something like that, we are in this possibility, and Morocco is in something like La Movida in Spain 10 or 15 years ago or after the death of Franco. And this is very, very important in this moment historique, as we say in France, this moment historique where there is like an explosion, not only of terrorists in Casablanca, but an explosion of creation, and it's fantastic.
Do we have time for one final question, maybe in French, so far?
Mm-hmm. Qu'est-ce que je veux dire? Qu'est-ce que je pourrais dire de plus?
Quel est le prochain projet?
Alors, j'ai plusieurs projets. Je suis en train de publier le Fastueux Maroc, des traditions et des coutumes. Et c'est un très gros livre d'art qui est, que je fais avec des Français d'ailleurs pour la réalisation visuelle. Et je veux figer toutes les traditions et les coutumes en bonne anthropologue pour qu'elles ne disparaissent pas, parce que tout est en train de disparaître, comme les dialectes, comme les vêtements, comme tout ce qu'il y a de plus authentiquement personnel à ce monde qu'est le Maghreb. Le Maghreb aujourd'hui n'est rien, ce n'est plus rien de ce qu'il était. Et en fait, le Maroc est un pays extraordinaire aussi à connaître anthropologiquement, historiquement et culturellement, parce qu'il n'a jamais été envahi par les Turcs. Donc il n'était pas sous l'obédience ottomane. Et ceci lui donne un caractère exemplaire par rapport aux Berbères, qui sont restés identiques, par rapport aux Arabo-Andalous, qui ont été rejetés d'Espagne, et par rapport à toutes les futuhat, c'est-à-dire les conquêtes arabes et musulmanes. Et ces visages sont en train d'être déstructurés parce que les intellectuels, les penseurs, les scientifiques ne savent pas qu'il y a une extrême urgence à faire ce que, par exemple, les Américains sont en train de collecter comme, et qu'ils collectent depuis très longtemps, comme le folklore, comme l'héritage immatériel, comme toutes ces choses-là, maintenant d'ailleurs deviennent le patrimoine mondial universel. Et puis, les autres projets, c'est de porter comme je suis éditrice aussi, c'est de porter des écrivains, des chercheurs. Et j'ai une collection d'universitaires. Je sors dans quelques jours, si ce n'est déjà fait, un livre qui s'appelle « L'image devant les trois monothéistes », l'interdit de l'image devant les trois monothéismes. C'est un doctorat d'esthétique. Et cette personne travaille entre Stockholm et Kenitra, où il enseigne à l'université. Et je suis extrêmement contente de porter la pensée des autres, comme par exemple un livre d'une algéro-française qui vit au Maroc et qui s'appelle « Psychanalyse des soufismes ». Je ne me contente pas, à travers cette maison d'édition, de porter mes idées, mais je veux en même temps que les idées actuelles, les courants, puissent être portés par quelqu'un de crédible. Pourquoi je dis ça ? Parce qu'on fait des livres, on en fait partout dans le monde, mais la rigueur dans le choix des individus qui doivent changer les sociétés par leur puissance culturelle n'est pas toujours bien faite. Par exemple, en France, elle a beaucoup diminué, beaucoup, beaucoup, beaucoup. L'Italie est dans une efflorescence extraordinaire et c'est pour ça que moi je suis partie intellectuellement en Italie et scientifiquement. C'est un pays qui m'a donné une leçon sur laquelle on va peut-être finir. Une leçon exemplaire, magnifique. L'italien est la 23e langue du monde et elle est parlée par plus ou moins 60 millions de personnes. Donc, ils sont obligés de tout traduire versus l'italien et de l'italien versus toutes les autres langues. Et comme moi, je suis complètement éclatée entre plusieurs pays, plusieurs cultures, plusieurs langues, les Italiens m'ont appris qu'on peut être minoritaire dans une langue, mais exister réellement. Et c'est à travers cette difficulté que, culturellement, les choses deviennent aussi efflorescentes. Je n'ai que cette image, c'est une espèce de bouillonnement d'idées qui, aujourd'hui, manque cruellement à la France, par exemple. Je suis à peine en train de tâter la matière américaine. Elle me fascine par sa capacité matérielle, réelle, visuelle, vivante, qui est facile à voir. Et j'aimerais aussi savoir quelles sont ces têtes qui révolutionnent le monde, parce que c'est la pensée qui révolutionne le monde. Hier, d'ailleurs, je demandais où est en train d'enseigner René Girard. Pourquoi ces personnes ? Parce que je pense que le monde, l'humanité, n'avance que grâce à quelques personnes qui portent toutes les autres. Et il en faut des millions et des milliers et des millions pour que, justement, eh bien, il émerge un cerveau qui est taillé comme un diamant brut. Et c'est ça qui est important.
I will try to briefly summarize the essence of Dr. El-Khayat's answer. She sums up her current projects according to two categories. The first is related to a Franco-Moroccan collaborative project that has as a basic concern the conservation of a common cultural and historical heritage that gives and creates a space for especially Berber and Andalusian Arab heritages, which have not up to the present found, you know, the same kind of visibility and valorization as the mainstream Arabo-Islamic heritage. On the other hand, she works on expanding the pool of the publications that are produced through the House of Publication, the publishing company that she presides and of which she's the founder, Aini Benay. And her ambition is to give a space to a variety of voices and diverse sensibilities that can create a kind of healthy and I think innovative climates where creative energies can inspire new visions for the future.
Thank you.
Africa Past and Present is produced by Matrix, the Center for Humane Arts, Letters, and Social Sciences Online at Michigan State University. Our producer is Scott Pennington. Technical assistance is provided by Chris Johnson, Ryan Blyton, and Alicia Shield. For more information about this show and to subscribe to the podcast, you can visit our website at afripod.aodl.org. If you have any comments or suggestions for future shows, please send us an email message at africa.podcast@matrix.msu.edu. Thanks for listening.